The Israel Report for the latest news and insights with Anthony Reich.
Boker Tov, Mr. Reich.
Boker Tov, Chad. Before talking about some of the juicy stories that we have to talk about, just a few snippets. There was an announcement yesterday that a drone was downed by the IDF after flying over the border from Lebanon. It is claimed that the drone belongs to Hezbollah. It is a little quadcopter, and apparently the statement from the IDF says that troops had been tracking this drone for the entire time that it had been up in the air, and that it was not brought down until such time as it actually entered Israeli airspace. So I'm guessing the idea was to try somehow to get physical access to the drone rather than just to get it out of the air, which it seems the IDF has succeeded in doing. From the pictures that I've seen of this drone, it didn't look like it was armed in any way, so it seems to be one of these reconnaissance-type drones rather than something that could potentially bring immediate threat to people living in the area. But nonetheless, even reconnaissance can be a threat. And then just another thing, we're not going to talk about COVID today, but I just wanted to say that a week into the trial that Israel has implemented to vaccinate people for the fourth time, now we're rolling out a fourth vaccine, statements have been made that antibodies have increased by fivefold for those people who have received their fourth booster vaccination. So, you know, more and more evidence coming out, even though this is still very, very early days in terms of, you know, being able to rely on information. But there can be little doubt that Israel's experience of vaccinating people has been across the board very successful, and that the increase in the number of antibodies and therefore the reduction in either the people getting ill or people actually suffering any major complications as a result of being infected are much reduced in Israel's experience from the vaccinations, and of course lots and lots of pressure and recommendations for people to get vaccinated. And indeed the Israeli public are taking up on this in big numbers. The vaccination centers yesterday ran out of vaccinations with the massive public interest in trying to get vaccinated as soon as possible. Currently, vaccines available to those over 60 and to healthcare workers. Israel has not run out of vaccine as such, but those that have been distributed yesterday to the vaccination centers were all used up. So there was a greater than expected demand as people turned up to get vaccinated. But we certainly have enough supply to go around, so I'm guessing that vaccination centers today will be restocked and people will continue to get their vaccines.
Let's chat about the story that sadly claimed the life of two Israeli Air Force pilots. That was the helicopter crash off the coast of Israel. Has anything more come out of that? Have they started with the investigation?
So a formal investigation has already been appointed by the IDF. In the meantime, the names of the crew members who were on board the helicopter have been released, and unfortunately two funerals already held yesterday for the two pilots, one being Lieutenant Colonel Erez Sahyani, the other being Major Chen Fogel, two Israeli Air Force pilots, helicopter pilots, who unfortunately did not survive that crash. The sole survivor of the crash was Captain Ron Berman, who is still quite seriously injured in hospital, but has relayed some very critical information and very pertinent information about what the cause of the crash was, what happened during those few minutes when an emergency was detected on board the helicopter. The helicopter was in a training flight. It was during the night. It was off the coast of Haifa when apparently a fire broke out in one of the engines of the helicopter. Now, according to the account by Captain Ron Berman, he claimed that the helicopter has the ability to land on water and can deploy a flotation mechanism which allows the helicopter to float on water for a sufficient period of time to allow the crew to get out. That is the theory. In practice, unfortunately, that buoyancy mechanism didn't seem to operate as planned, and that he ultimately was the only one who was able to get out of the helicopter. His story tells of numerous attempts to return to the helicopter as it was on the water and sinking to try to rescue his two colleagues who had remained in the cockpit. Apparently, they were all seat-belted into their seats. This may have been a factor in their inability to escape from the cockpit when that helicopter landed in a controlled fashion on the water. In other words, the emergency was detected and they managed to go through the procedures of deploying the buoyancy mechanism, which I don't understand very much about, but I'm just saying it as simply as I can. There is apparently something which allows the helicopter to float at least for a certain period of time. This didn't work. So not only was there a fire in one of the engines, which is of course a technical malfunction and needs investigation in itself, but also this deploying of the buoyancy mechanism, which didn't work, seems to have ultimately been the cause of the deaths of those two pilots who seemed unable to escape. And the captain, Ron Verman, then goes on to say that he managed somehow while in the water and having attempted to rescue his two colleagues, then had his cell phone. I don't know how this works exactly in the water, but apparently he made a call to the commander of the base to explain to them that the helicopter had crashed and that they need to send out emergency crews immediately. So he managed to make that call from wherever he was in the water to announce this to activate the emergency services immediately. Unfortunately, it was all to no avail in the case of the two pilots who ultimately lost their lives in that helicopter, in the cockpit. It seems just that they were unable to escape quickly enough as the helicopter sank into the sea. Their bodies were ultimately recovered, and despite numerous and very, very significant resuscitation efforts, unfortunately, they both lost their lives. So again, our condolences to their families, to two Israeli soldiers who have lost their lives in the call of duty, and who apparently, in the words of the Prime Minister, were amongst Israel's best sons, who were really giving everything that they could in the protection of the State of Israel. This is a very sad story, and of course, a major investigation has already been launched, and the rescue crews have been trying to get all the different parts of the helicopter together so that they can do a full investigation. But the fact that we have one survivor who's told his story and will continue to tell his story, I think will be very, very influential indeed in determining exactly what went down during those emergency few minutes that happened on Monday night.
Our thoughts are with their families, of course. Israel's new law on surrogacy is due to come into effect next week. Give us a little bit of a background regarding why this new law is coming into effect and what the changes are, in fact.
Well, the law on surrogacy, for reasons which I'm not familiar with, but up until now, the law of surrogacy allowed only mixed-sex couples and single women to have children via surrogacy. That was the law that was. Now, the health minister, Nitzan Horowitz, announced yesterday that starting next week, same-sex couples, single men, and transgender people will also be entitled under the law to parent children through surrogacy, which of course was an option that was not previously available to them. So the new laws will come into effect on January the 11th. And interestingly, it is Nitzan Horowitz, the health minister who announced this, who is an openly gay member of Knesset and a member of government. And only the second, as far as I'm aware, openly gay person who has been represented in the Knesset, in Israel's Knesset up until now. So it's probably very pertinent that he is the one to initiate this new law and ultimately to announce it yesterday. And what he said was that this move will allow future fathers, gay couples, and essentially every person in Israel to allow them equal access to surrogacy in Israel. Generally, the way that surrogacy works is that women from abroad are used as surrogate mothers. It's quite uncommon for surrogate mothers to be found in Israel. Again, I'm not really sure why that's the case, but from the stories that I've heard anecdotally, most of the surrogacy is somehow performed abroad, whether it be via artificial insemination or whether it be via some sort of an IVF treatment of some sort. The lady is found and she becomes pregnant, and then she has to give up rights all rights to that particular child as it is handed over to the surrogate parents. Part of the new law also apparently protects surrogate mothers. In other words, those women who decide to have children on behalf of surrogate parents, the surrogate mother, she also enjoys some new protections under this law. And it's interesting that in a country where we have real contradictions in terms of the way that family law is conducted, so much of our family law is under the auspices of religious law, under the auspices of the rabbinical courts. For example, getting married, getting divorced, things of that sort of nature are all not under the auspices of our general court system, but rather under the auspices of the rabbinical courts. And of course, under religious law, the concept of same-sex couples and fathers having access to surrogate children is quite alien. So we have a classic case of a real discrepancy, a real contradiction here between the law that has now been passed into a law by Health Minister ניצן Horowitz. And I think it's absolutely right that every type of person and those, and no matter what sort of relationships they might choose for themselves, are entitled to raise children. Children in Israel are such a massive part of our society that any person growing up, no matter what their relationship is, would feel different if they weren't able to raise children. Children make up such an important part of our society. So I think that this is absolutely right, and I hope that it will be conducted responsibly and in the right possible way.
It's fascinating. It's very encouraging and forward thinking. It just leaves so many questions for me, which I'll take offline with you one of the days, like the Moses law regarding the child's birthright and all of those things with the surrogacy. It's so fascinating, and it was so important that you raised the issue of the rabbinical courts and this being something that's coming out of the Knesset. There's going to be a lot of interesting debate about this, and I'm sure we're going to see a lot more in the coming weeks relating to it. But very forward-thinking, something very, very positive. Moving on, Google has announced the acquisition of an Israeli cybersecurity company. What are the details of this deal, and what are we talking about when we talk about cybersecurity in this particular context?
Well, Israel is already quite well known in the cybersecurity world. A company like Checkpoint, for example, blazed the trail for cybersecurity in Israel, but Checkpoint is really just one example of a whole host, dozens, maybe even hundreds of companies in Israel that are focusing on the cybersecurity world. Israel seems to have a particular talent, not only because of soldiers coming out of the army who've had to deal with cybersecurity and have had an incredibly solid grounding in all issues relating to cybersecurity, whether it be from an attacking point of view, finding weaknesses in operating systems that can potentially be attacked, holes that can be found, day zero faults, whatever they call them, errors in the coding that could potentially be attacked, or whether it be trying to set up protection against the possibility of others infiltrating your system. In the case of Simplify, which is S-I-E-M-P-L-I-F-Y, Simplify, Google has bought this company for $500 million. Now, not the most expensive company that Israeli company that Google has bought, because we will always remember Waze, which was bought 9 years ago by Google for $1 billion 9 years ago. So Simplify has now been acquired for $500 million. This purchase apparently is Google's fourth acquisition of an Israeli company and the first acquisition of a cybersecurity company outside of the United States at all, even though Google has already invested $50 million in another Israeli cybersecurity company called Cyber Reason. So Google spending a lot of money in the whole area of cybersecurity. And what Simplify offers is a platform that allows security analysts at enterprises and organizations to apparently work what they call smarter and faster against potential threats. So this is really a protection against possible infiltration of unauthorized infiltration of systems in the area of enterprise and organizations. And it allows security analysts to automate certain tasks using different security tools to respond to cyber threats. And they keep talking about it being smarter, more precise, and faster. So it's all about speed, and it's all about being very, very precise in identifying what the threat is. And apparently Google has found that this company, Simplify, has tools which are somewhat unique and has decided to pay $500 million to acquire this company, a company that was founded in 2015 by three entrepreneurs. Apparently, up until now, some $58 million has been invested by various venture capital funds in this company. So that amount of $58 million has instantaneously and overnight been translated into a value of $500 million. Not a bad return on your investment. So congratulations to the team from Simplify. And let's hope that by becoming part of the Google family, that they will be able to grow from strength to strength and really make themselves felt within the Google Cloud area, which is where they're going to be situated.
Mr. Reich, thank you so much. I look forward to our interaction again tomorrow morning.